spreading their message to millions. Spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk. Talking Kiss. Kiss fans and Kiss podcast. With your host, Mike from Nashville. Tuck Watts. And special guest, it could even be you. Now here they are, your Kiss Talk crew.
Everybody, welcome to a special crossover episode from Classic Rock Drops and Kiss Talk. And I am in the big room at the Nashville Rockin' Pod with my co-host, Tuck, the Professor Watts.
That's right. This is like when Scooby-Doo meets Kiss, when Superman, I don't know, meets Batman. This is kind of like, it's like Justice League in here right now. You've got all the Rockin' Pod podcasting superstars present for this. We got Sonny Pooney right beside me.
The Sonny Pooney, the Matt Porter, the Joe Polo. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, some of the other podcasts that are here are, of course, the host podcast, Decibel Geek.
This is their home field. Absolutely. They got the home field advantage here.
Yeah, Chris Sinzak getting all the credit for putting this bad boy together here. But Rock and Metal Podcast, Rock Indoor Roll, Podkist, the Podfather, Ken Mills is in the room.
Saw him having breakfast this morning.
There you go. Electric Crush, Tramps Like Us. Let's see. Fangirl with a Paycheck. Rachel's Rock Refuge. And, of course, Podcast Rock City, Growing Up Rock, Talk To Me, The Kiss Room, Cheap Talk, Trick Chat. That one's a challenge for me to always say. And, of course, our buds over at Ages of Rock. Kiss FAQ with Julian is in the room down at the other end with his we're going to give him credit for the Ego Wall at this year's Expo. Cobras and Fire, I'm in love with that song. Potter Than Hell guys are here. And, of course, we got tons of high-powered rock guests. You want to read off some of those?
Yeah, so we've got Brian Forsyth from Kix, who we saw last night with the Rock and Roll Residency. We've got Michael Sweet from Stryper, David Ellefson from Megadeth, Tony Harnell. A lot of people know him from TNT. He also played with Skid Row for a little bit there. We've got Kenny Olson, Kid Rock, Jack Gibson. We saw him last night. Do an amazing performance with Michael Sweet, the Rock and Roll Residency, playing Soldiers Under Command. Phenomenal performance.
He was on fire, I'm telling you what. With the Rock and Roll Residency, also kind of known as the Talisman, also kind of known as the Ace Frehley and Gene Simmons band for the most part. They had a different drummer and bass player, I guess. But
they were joined on stage last night with Brian Dover, Michael Sweet, Brian Forsyth joined them for a little bit, and I'm forgetting somebody, I think.
Yep.
Tony Harnell joined them, but they ripped through some Led Zeppelin, some Sammy Hagar. They did some Stryper stuff. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a fantastic intro last night for the kind of pre-concert, and you can kind of hear the activities going on behind us, so we apologize for that.
That microphone does work, by the way.
Yep. I think you got that. You got that worked out, buddy. So anyway, but it's kind of our little intro to what's going on here today. We're going to have a ton of interviews following this, and I hope all of you that listen to Classic Rock Drops get a little exposure to the Kiss Talk oriented guys that we're going to have, and of course, Kiss Talk folks, you're going to get exposed to some of the new rock and roll that's available to you by other artists. So I hope you enjoy the episode and. We'll get started here shortly.
Now if we could just get Republicans and Democrats to do a little crossover and support each other.
That'd be awesome. Why can't we all just get along? All right. We'll get started here. Thanks. Everybody, we are at the Nashville Rockin' Pod, and we have the pleasure of having somebody sitting here that is one of my favorite podcasts, one of my favorite people on podcast.
Dare I say a legend in the world of podcasting.
I keep calling him the Walter Cronkite of podcast just because I think it has something to do with the warmness of the voice. He's got the perfect radio voice, like none of us
podcasters
do.
You guys are too nice.
So, but anyway,
how do I
Matt
follow
Porter,
that lead?
Matt Porter from the Kiss Room. So, yeah, thanks, Matt. For
oh, you're
down
welcome.
With
us. I'm Absolutely. Thrilled.
Yeah. So, kind of what I wanted to ask was, let's just back up a little bit about Matt Porter and get into how do you get into the podcast for the Kiss Room? Where does that spawn from? I mean, you're doing this for Monco Radio, which I think.
You know what? The it's funny. That's the really the birth of the Kiss Room comes from the fact that when I, where I work at Montgomery County Community College, they have Monco Radio, and they've had it for years. And anybody listening to the Kiss Room knows that story is Kiss was supposed to play Montgomery County Community College May 11th, 1974. So around May 11th, 1974, I would always sneak on Monco Radio and do a Kiss show. So and then I would start sneaking on around spring break because there's nobody around. And then I would sneak on around my birthday, which is January 5th, because there was nobody around. Their classes aren't in session. So 2012, May 11th was a Friday. So I'm going to do my Kiss special on May 11th. And it went great. And everybody was like, you got to keep doing this. And I'm like, wow, like I would love to. And then like right away bought thekissroom.com, started making the name. At that point, I didn't have the logo. It was just the Kiss Room.
Yeah.
And started on Podomatic, and I would start. And so June 2012 was the first of what
cool.
was called the Kiss Room. Wow. But I had done Kiss specials like all the time before, and but that was when it formally became that. So
that's pretty cool. That's a great story. So you know, you go back to the generic questions, I think, of when was the first time you saw Kiss?
You know what? I saw Kiss really late in Kiss-try. It was April 1st, 1986, which would have been Asylum Tour because I could finally drive. So you figure by that point I was 86, I'm, I guess, 18 or whatever, and I have a driver's license. And, you know, and had missed all those makeup years as a kid because, like, I don't know, for some reason the idea of going to Philadelphia, even though it would only have been an hour away, I don't know, it wasn't on my radar. And finally I could drive, so it was Asylum Tour. And the funny thing is it was Stabler Arena, which was a small venue compared to, you know, some of the bigger places that they're even playing now. And we couldn't find it. And I remember getting lost and driving and going into Bethlehem. And people didn't seem to know where Stable Arena is. And at the time, I'm a kid. And look, God bless GPS. Now it would be no problem. We just drove all the way from Philly down to here in Nashville. But that was the first time. And they had that gigantic logo behind the stage.
Yeah.
Everything, they're playing a million miles an hour. And the funniest thing about that show, which I'll never forget, we had nosebleed seats. Gene's pointing right at us. I swear he is. And then you realize, as you kind of analyze it, his follow spot was right above my head. He's looking right at his follow spot. But it was great. And I remember it being just, like, mind-blowing. And, you know, it still is.
Yeah, it still is.
Well, those are the cool things, too, when you know, you think they're pointing at you.
Right.
And then you find out, really, that that's just something they just point.
Right.
You know, in a general direction, because there's, like, 40 people over there that think he was pointing at me.
We were convinced we had to be rocking harder than everybody else, and he knew it. And, wait, that's his follow spot.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that he's always pointed at me at every show.
Right.
So, no, it's kind of unique, actually. I'm 53 years old, so as I listen to more and more podcasts, it seems like there are a lot of guys in the podcast Kiss Arena and other podcasts that's where they got on, is in the mid-80s. And that initially seemed strange to me because I thought, how can you not have, like, picked up on the makeup years? And it's all about where you are in life and your age.
Well, I was a fan from 76.
Okay.
Like, and that was what was really why I always say it was late as far as Kiss, is the fact that I didn't go to see them. But we were fans. Like, I was part, like, you figure 1976, I'm 8 years old. And I'm squarely in that target of what they
Me
were
too.
Looking at. Like, Paul in Halloween special, I remember that being, like, monumental. Like, people a decade earlier would talk about the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And you watch Paul in Halloween special now, and it's so cheesy. But at the time,
man,
it was unbelievable.
And you say what you want about Kiss Meets the Phantom, but
right.
I remember sitting there event. Watching it. I know exactly where I was. I mean, I know I had one friend there with me, and it was phenomenal, right? We all waited to see Kiss because you never got to hear them talk.
Right.
And you probably had the cards.
All of that. And I still have them. They still smell like the gum. You got it.
Yeah. absolutely.
But like even that magazines, you go and you get those Grooves and Cream, those Kiss specials, and they're glossy paper. In a lot of ways, that's what I, in my mind, that's what the Kiss Room is formatted. It's a lot of Kiss. There might be some other bands. It's once a month, like a magazine style.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like I try and make it. You cram a lot in. Once a month.
That's a good.
And that's kind of my. Analogy. That's always been my kind of framework for the Kiss Room. So.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But you're right. I mean, I love to think back. I mean, I've got all those magazines from the 70s, right? And we like, you scoped the TV guide back then for Don Kirshner Midnight Special, and you looked for anything. You kept thinking one day Kiss is going to be on Saturday Night Live,
right?
You know. You just kept waiting for
But you know, and it's funny because I think, and we're all probably right around the same age, but the thing that at the time, if you missed it, you missed it.
It.
But also, it was in your mind what you saw. You couldn't go back the next day and go, maybe that was cheesier than I remember. It was this thing in your mind that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, even Kiss Meets the Phantom, a lot of people love to rip on it now. I remember it being a blast.
Yeah. I don't rip on it at all because
I love it.
To me, it's the memory of when I sat there and watched it.
Right.
And I thought it was phenomenal.
Yep. And nobody ripped on it until years later. It seemed like I never heard anybody making fun of it. I mean, it was kind of silly and stuff, but nobody said that until later.
Right. Yep. Well, and especially because you figure how many years was it until you could get a copy, even on crappy VHS.
Yeah, right.
You know, that Good Times VHS came out. But you had to wait for years. And it would come on at 1 o'clock in the morning on the CBS, you know, late night movie or whatever. But maybe a handful of times. You know, I didn't see it till years later again, which, you know, I think it has something to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember, of course, I waited all those years for him to be on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And then, you know, finally Fridays rolls around with the older stuff. And, you know, you're going, you know, here they are. They look different. They sound different. They're playing something totally different. And it's like, I don't care. Kiss is on TV, right?
You know, it's funny. That would be a good topic. I mean, probably for a whole other show. But the I think in some ways, Kiss was too big. If they had tried to put them on the Saturday Night Live stage, which was always small.
Right.
Like Kiss, and especially think about 78, 79, like the stage was huge. Mm-hmm. And you have the platforms and the bombs. And you couldn't do that on Saturday Night Live. And I think that they were almost trapped by the size of what Kiss was at that time.
Yeah.
By the time they're doing Fridays, it's the Elder. Now you don't have a big stage because things maybe aren't doing as well. But at the height of Kiss, it would have been small to go on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, it could have altered their image. But then again, I mean, I think what they had on Don Kirshner or Midnight Special wasn't huge.
Well, because they weren't huge yet.
Well, that's true.
You know, think about it. You're talking 75. Yeah. So they're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then by the time, obviously, when Kiss Meets the Phantom, they're too big. I always said they're too big for Saturday Night Live. You know, had they done it in 75, 76, those would be legendary videos that we would all watch now.
Right.
But then the same way, Midnight Special, Don Kirshner, how many times you watch them? They're amazing.
Yeah.
And that's a young, hungry band that can't wait for something to happen. 77, 78, they're doing it on their terms. They're not going to size down for a TV show.
Yeah.
They're sending you a clip and saying, and here's Kiss.
That's true. I do remember some of those disappointing moments where it's like, Kiss is going to be on the show tonight. And it's like, no, that's the same thing.
It's
that
the same thing, right.
And that was before you had music videos, and they were basically just showing your music video.
Right. You got it, right.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff, man. So.
All right, cool. So talk about podcasting, if you don't mind. How have you you got in early in the game, right? I mean, look at this.
This is amazing. I mean, and really shout out, I mean, Chris Sinzak, who put this together, the fact that there's so many people here, and it's funny because I keep joking to myself that it really is your Facebook life come to life because it's everybody that you talk to online are here, and you look around and you see them. The first year was really mind-blowing, like meeting everybody in real life, but then I think really now it's like it's just an excuse for a giant party. We all get together. It really is the most fun time. The concert last night was amazing. But the fact that there's so many people here, you see all different levels of, like, I got to say how impressed I am. You have the matching microphone covers. And the funny thing is now you have a red one, a blue one. You have the Ace one. I'm on the Eric Carr orange mic cover, which is really impressive. So you guys were going deep with your Kiss references.
Well, we actually we couldn't find a purple cable to do Paul's microphone, so he's already giving me a hard time about it. He goes, man, we got to get purple.
You know, people, if you're listening, you should see that everything is color coordinated. Their headphones, their cabling, the microphone covers, everything is color coordinated. It's very impressive.
Even the lines on our tube socks are are color coordinated.
Woo! It's always something.
Kiss Talk giving out a button. Look at that, having the best time ever right here at their table.
We're giving away finger skateboards. We got finger skateboards.
Kiss Talk guitar picks. Okay. That's amazing.
Did you get one of each? There's two different. So, so one's his signature, one's mine on the back of those.
And we're giving the occasional random Kiss Rubik's Cube away.
That is beautiful.
So we got a few of those to give away. Kind of holding out on some of those. If we have any little
fantastic.
Yeah, good stuff. Love our listeners.
This is a great room. I mean, you know, considering that first year where we all had to sit in each other's lap to this is amazing.
Right. Yeah. This is great. And the funny thing is, in Joe Polo from Podcast Rock City, he's right down there. We were joking. It's really not a Kiss Expo, but have you seen some of that Kiss merch over there? Holy mackerel. Yeah. It's like you could go broke in a second.
Yeah, that guy's got a ton of vinyl, too. I mean, I could easily go spend $1,000.
So. Without even thinking about it.
Yep.
Well, you know, with the wife at home, you got to think about it.
You got to think about it.
You better think about it.
You got that right.
There are some repercussions.
Awesome.
All right, man. Thanks for taking the time to sit with us.
My pleasure. I'm thrilled.
I appreciate
it. Was fun being on here.
And thanks for blazing a trail for us to follow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, I've always kind of done what I have done. It's like the fact that a lot of people have jumped on board as it's come along. I think it's great. The technology is not the obstacle anymore. It used to be you had to have a lot of money to have a lot of equipment. Now you can get equipment. It's all about what your content is. And that's the nice thing. The walls are all down. Everybody has a platform, and I think it's just fantastic. And especially as I drive an hour every way from work and back, I like to listen to everybody because it's like having friendly voices in your ears as you're going through your day. It's nice.
It is. I drive about 40,000 miles a year, and
you can relate.
Very little radio, so it's all podcasts. And actually, I like so many podcasts now. It's hard to even fit all of them in. Right.
You got to work at it. Right. Yeah.
That's cool. What was the radio station growing up for you?
You know what? Where I lived, it was really WYSP or WMMR, which WMMR is still Philly's rock station. And there was also out of Allentown was Z95 WZZO. And I remember Ace was on WZZO the one time, and we listened for hours because it wasn't like he was going to be on between like 7 and 10. And you know,
Ace, it's like when the Comcast guy comes out.
Right, exactly. It was the same kind of thing.
I'll be there between 4 and 9.
And WFIL. Anybody in Philly will remember WFIL, and that's going back 40 years.
It's crazy.
It's sad what radio's become.
Yeah, it's just so different. You know, it's not the powerhouse that it was.
Right.
You know, that's actually really funny. You know, this is a podcast expo, and I like to think my show is really a radio show that I rebroadcast. But that sense of kind of immediate, everybody listening at once is kind of gone. And in a lot of ways, because I can listen when I want. I listen to you guys when it's convenient to me.
Right.
And I think that's been the number one change. The technology has made it so I don't have to tune in at 9 o'clock. I'm going to tune in at 8 o'clock when I'm driving, and I'll listen to you. I'm a day late on your new podcast or whatever. Right. But that's the shift.
Yeah. But still, I mean, there is a fun part of it for me to be able to listen live. So when I am driving at the right time, and I can listen to you live, because I love to, like, punch something on Facebook, and, you know, it's fun when you guys go, hey, so-and-so, you actually reference it live on the air. That's still fun, right?
I still love it. Yeah. I love that ability to reach out to everybody at once, and sometimes they reach back, so it's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And same thing with Podcast Rock City has their live version of Wednesday Night. And, you know, I love their Sweet 16 thing they do, and it's fun to participate in that.
Absolutely.
So when I can do that, I'm there. So both you guys doing that live version of the show is something special for me anyway.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for being on, man. It's been great.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the Rockin' Pod.
Thanks, man.
You too.
Thanks, guys.
All right, this is Tuck Watts and Mike Williams back with Classic Rock Drops and Kiss, a special crossover episode the very first podcast that interviewed me was the guy we've got sitting with us right now, Joe Polo.
Get out of town. First
wow.
one.
First one. At Rockin' Pod 1.
That is awesome.
So, yeah.
It's so good to see you guys.
Good seeing you, man.
It's amazing that we're here again.
It's amazing what this has grown into.
There you go.
It really yep. is. I'm expecting, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people today. I think that would be a good number.
I can see that.
Mike and I have actually signed 2 autographs today.
This is amazing. When that happens, does it feel weird? Yeah. It does. Somebody's like, can I get my picture taken with you? I'm like, you know who I am,
yeah,
right? I'm not Danny Bonaduce.
Are you sure you want a picture of this?
I wonder if they're going to the post office and holding up next to the wanted posters and just checking to see if it matches.
Boom, that's
there
funny.
There may be a reward. Anyway.
I always wondered when they do that, you know, at the post. Why didn't they just keep the guy when they were taking his picture?
I'll tell you what. That is the question now that I will ask everybody at the post office when I... You had him.
You took his picture. Why didn't you hold on to him then?
What happened? Why did he get away? Did he drive?
So tell us about what's going on in your world right now.
So let's talk a little bit about Podcast Rock City, because I think you guys, we had Matt Porter on just a little bit ago, and he was one of the early podcasters, right?
Yes,
and
one of the first.
I kind of see you as one of the early guys who started out on your own, basically alone,
right.
And evolved it into what it is, and now you got the live show, which you've kind of handed off a little bit, I think, which is kind of cool.
Right.
But we were talking about with Matt how we still love the live element that he offers and that you guys offer, just because you can interact live, right?
Right.
So that's always fun. But, I mean, tell us a little bit about Podcast Rock City, where it's going at this point.
Okay, so after today, we're quitting. No, I'm kidding.
Wow, breaking news.
No. You know, the cool thing about being a KISS podcast is you never can run out of things to talk
never.
About. It's just like any kind of podcast that talks about multi-bands.
Yep.
You could do that with. Because you can find a band to talk about every episode. KISS has had such a long, storied history that you could pick the littlest, minutest, tiniest, littlest things. I said that in 5 different ways. Little, tiny. The only thing I didn't mention as small was what's in my pants. And you'll edit that out later.
You're talking about your wallet? Or?
Probably not.
My wallet is small, too. Anyway, and you can talk about it for an hour. And people will listen for an hour, and they'll email you, and they'll give you their opinion. And that is really what makes doing what we do fun. Because, you know, it's not like there's no instant reports. You have no idea how many people are listening. You have no, you know, you're just doing the show. But Podcast Rock City, we've been going 6 years now. And, I mean, I'll repeat things. I don't care. I'll have Mike on. I'll have Tuck on. And then 6 months later, there's something else for us to talk about.
Yep.
I'll have you back on again. Why not? And that's what we do. And it makes it a lot of fun. And really what it comes down to, the secret is, I get to talk to my friends once a week about KISS.
Yep.
And we enjoyed talking about that. And that's the main reason why we do it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like hanging out.
Yeah. So, of course, we started KISS Talk earlier this year. And it was really your show that pressured me into doing that. Because, I mean, I would have loved to start doing a KISS podcast originally. But I didn't think I could add to what was already being done. But then it got to be that I got tired of listening to you guys and me not being able to talk back. So I told Tuck, I says, man, I got to have somewhere to talk about this. So we got to do a KISS podcast just so I can answer back to the other podcasts that I listen to. So that's kind of what I do. We'll bring up every other podcast that had a show last week and what y'all talked about. And I'll say, I think they were wrong. I think Sonny was wrong. Or I think so-and-so, you know.
Sonny is wrong a lot.
The fact is,
especially when it comes to The Elder.
I was going to say, The Elder is not a bad album. And isn't it like he likes Asylum best or something to that effect? like, no, that's not the best album. So, but yeah, it gives me just a chance to like tell Tuck what I think about everything else that's being talked about. So
yeah, it's funny because Jody on our show, whenever we're wrong, you always can tell because he always goes, like somebody will go, what do you think the best Kiss record is? And you know, I'll go, Rock and Roll Over. He'll go, yeah.
It's Dressed to Kill. Yeah.
That's what he means. But yeah, means you are wrong and stupid.
Right. And just say, Jody's favorite record is obviously Dressed to Kill. I can remember that because I did a scientific study of my of why what album do I really like best that I listen to the most, and it comes down to Dressed to Kill. And there's no doubt that you know, Lover All I Can and songs like that are just fantastic. But my emotional attachment...
I think you missed that.
Yeah. Anyway, my emotional attachment is to Dynasty and to Unmasked, right?
So, Dynasty, why?
Because that was the first tour that I saw. And I mean, I can remember going to Record Bar and buying that album. I mean, it's the whole era of 79 for me. And then Unmasked kind of followed that, and I love the Unmasked album. So... Before I did my little scientific study, if somebody said, what's your favorite album? I said, I guess it's Dynasty because I'm so emotionally attached to it. But truthfully, Dressed to Kill is really the album that I listen to the most.
It's the perfect album except for one song, and we all know that. I cannot stand Anything for My
song,
Baby.
Anything for My Baby, Lover All I Can.
On my version, I have literally taken a knife and cut a groove across that record. From where it goes, you know, there's the silence.
So
when the needle hits it, it just goes right across.
So you think that Mr. Blackwell is a better song than Anything for My Baby?
Absolutely.
You think Let's Put the X in Sex.
Let's see. If I was Jody, I would go, huh.
Yeah. No, Anything for My Baby is like... It's like scratching your nails down a chalkboard for me.
Is it just because the intro is like Rock and Roll All Night?
Rock and Roll All Night, and then I Would Steal
Anything for My Baby.
Yeah.
That's Aaron Camaro in the background. Yeah. He's on the show now. He doesn't know
Sounds
it.
Sounds like the voice of God.
But, got some podcasts over here, man. You go get some stuff over there, man. You got to do this over there. And that's Aaron, man.
And if you can see the visual, I mean, Aaron has a look about him, and he's got his silver
look at the silver jacket.
Yeah.
Where do you buy a silver jacket like that? Where do you go? Where do you, if you say, I need a silver shiny jacket, where do you go?
I think that was a white sweater that he spray painted a metallic silver color. I made that up, but it looks real.
Maybe you go to the Ace Frehley Space Ace store on there.
There needs to be a Space Ace store.
Not everybody can pull that off.
Only Aaron in this entire room.
I put that on and they laughed me out of here.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Kind of flip the table a little bit. Is there anything you've never heard us talk about that you're like, I can't believe they've never talked about this on their show?
That's tough, man. I try not to get too deep in the weeds and copy your show. Because I'm, like I said, I'm always eager to talk to somebody about what I've already heard that week. So sometimes I feel like I'm copying.
We're always looking for, you know, new subjects and stuff like that. And it's tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. So. But anyway, we want you to keep it up. No, I mean, nonetheless, we love both shows. And I like that you've taken the live show and kind of thrown it out on the podcast.
I appreciate it very much. I love you guys. I listen all the time. Now, you guys are now doing more Kiss Talk than before.
Right.
So we're kind of back in the groove now. We got both podcasts kind of running, both Classic Rock Drops and Kiss Talk. Now we're back full swing.
We've got a couple of Kiss Talks in the can, so to speak. Yeah. We've got and one that's going to be kind of cool. And we did sort of a fantasy set list, like a fantasy baseball team, where we had a couple of our friends come in and we picked set lists for a live show. And if you picked a song, I can't use that song in my set list. So
that is awesome. I think we're going to do something like that with Sonny. I'm not sure how it'll go, but I think we're going to do something like that with Sonny. You guys should come and do it with us.
We'd love to.
And then I think that what we have to do is pick our songs, and then we have to listen to those for a month, and then get back together and, like, what would you trade? Would you trade something out?
So on this show that we did, it was funny because, you know, somebody would pick early in the show, you know, they would pick Black Diamond, and you had that plan for your encore maybe as one of your picks. And, you know, we had one friend who wasn't a huge Kiss fan, so he ruined some of the songs for us. And I'm just, you know, I'm not going to mention his name, Eddie. But
yeah, but you know, because you wound up with four separate live shows, basically, with all different songs. But it looks like things are kind of ramping up here on stage, so we better wrap up here. Joe, thanks for coming on.
Thanks,
thank
brother.
You guys very much. I love you both.
All right, guys, this is Classic Rock Drops and Kiss Talk. We're kind of doing a crossover episode this at the Nashville Rockin' Pod, and we have Toby Wright with us, and a very unique situation is that we just had him mix our podcast. So
yeah.
But, of course, he's not going to want credit for that when he goes. If he goes,
I'll just take assistant engineering credit.
There you go.
You know, it's all good.
Perfect. But we appreciate you guys. You know, we appreciate you being here at the event and
giving
us
pleasure.
The opportunity to talk to you. We got to speak to you for a short period of time at the first Rockin' Pod.
Yes.
Yep. So that was very cool. But we just kind of want to touch on some things because we've only got 15 minutes to just and to pack your career in 15 minutes is a bit troubling. But so we'll just kind of touch on some things if that's okay.
Speaking fast forward.
So how did you get started? I mean, what was your background prior to your first record or any of that stuff? What was your, you know, coming out of high school even or whatever?
I went to NYU, and when I was at NYU, I met up with some folks there that, you know, some were very go-getters and others weren't. I tended to go with the go-getters, so I ended up at Electric Lady Studios.
Oh, wow.
Long story short, and you know, just did an internship for like literally $5 a day, and started there, and it kind of snowballed from there because at that time we, you know, the Rolling Stones' Tattoo U was being made there. There was a host of others, you know, amazing records.
But at that time, like now, there's programs and colleges have courses and stuff. You had none of that. You had to learn it sort of on the fly, right? I mean, on the go.
Yeah, and there was this course called the Institute of Audio Research.
Okay.
They were affiliated with NYU. So I was doing my NYU stuff, and then I also went to this Institute of Audio Research at the same time.
Okay.
So I kind of had, you know, they had hands-on training, but it wasn't as hands-on as I got to do at Electric Lady.
Right. And now, of course, you can get training, you know, a ton of colleges. NYU was probably one of the very few programs that had a program like that.
Right, right. Yeah. And that, yeah, now they're all over the place.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. And some of them are good and some of them aren't so good. So.
Right.
So let's just, I mean, of all your catalog of involvement and credits, just give us a couple that stick out to you as your favorites, if you don't have a problem picking favorites, so to speak.
I don't. Well, sometimes I do.
next to you, maybe. I don't know.
Some of the experiences are some of the best things. I mean, they might not have been the best records, you know, or most popular records or whatever, but, you know, the experiences when I made those records were, you know, the best. And one of them sticks out to me is Alice in Chains Unplugged.
Wow.
And also the Kiss Carnival of Souls was an amazing experience as well. You know, Alice was Alice. I worked with them. You know, I did like 6 or 7 records with them. And, you know, the Unplugged was just, it was amazing because, you know, it was all live and, you can watch the DVD.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can relive that experience as, you know, as we do it. And Carnival of Souls was just amazing because of, you know, Gene and Paul and the band were just, they're icons. You know, I grew up listening to them, and you know, it's just another amazing experience. You know,
so since we do Kiss Talk, which is an all Kiss podcast, let's talk about Carnival of Souls for just a minute to make sure we get that in. I think Tuck had come up with a couple of good questions for you earlier.
Okay,
and I think it kind of leans towards what was the state of mind in that record? When they came into that record, they were not thinking reunion, but through the course of that, did Paul and Gene maybe detach? Or was that even the case? Because sometimes it seems like that's the picture that gets painted.
Well, we were about half to three-quarters of the way done with the record, and literally Gene took a phone call during one of the sessions.
Okay.
And came back and told us that, you know, the news.
Right.
That they had been offered X amount of dollars to go out on tour and do the original makeup and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the room just sank because we were, you know, literally in the middle of doing this record.
And when you're doing a record like that, true or false, I mean, your whole soul is in that project, right?
Absolutely true. And, you know, everybody, like, you know, I think even Paul was like, you know, and I asked the question, so what do we do from here?
Okay.
You know, and Gene said, keep going. Let's finish this. You know, it's like, okay. You know, but Bruce Kulick, you know, he was just kind of let down. Eric was definitely let down.
Yeah.
You know, so it was heart-wrenching. But, you know, the money they got offered was too good to be passed up by them, and that's understandable, you know.
So at that point, does the project get kind of left to you and Bruce to finish up? Or just
no,
you?
they were there.
Okay.
You know, I took it and, you know, saw it all the way through. You know, we after that initial moment, we took a little break, walked away for a few minutes, and then came back and said, okay, let's do this, you know.
Okay.
You know, because we're all adults, and we love, you know,
right.
Everybody in that room loves music, period. So what are you going to do, walk out? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? That wouldn't have made sense at all.
Right.
And I kind of get the feeling when you guys were working on that before that news that – all of you are certainly, I feel like, you and Bruce, and I say this because I've listened to Bruce talk about this so much,
right,
is that, I mean, this was going to be like no other, a landmark album, just something really new for, you know, and it still is,
right,
for Kiss.
Right.
And it was going to be presented in just a new way, like, you know, I mean, Kiss is kind of famous for reinvention, I think, and that was their moment of reinvention that all of a sudden...
Right, and it's, you know, I've been accused of not understanding the band. You know, I've heard that before from other podcasters, and that to me is ridiculous because I understand the band very, very much. And the record that we made together was a record that they wanted to make. Okay, they wanted to make that genre of music.
Okay.
And, you know, so at that point in time in my career, I was, you know, at the height of that quote-unquote type of music, right?
Yeah.
And so it made sense for them to hire me. Okay, I was
absolutely.
I was recommended by Bob Ezrin, right? One of their, you know, one of the greatest producers
who had just worked with them the album prior.
Exactly, and he, you know, he didn't know much about that genre of music, right? So, you know, and it takes a big man to, you know, just recommend someone else,
sure,
and say, hey, you know, I'm not the guy for this job.
Yeah.
You're better than I am at this. Here you go. Let me turn you on to this guy.
And when people say that that's not Kiss, I'm like, Kiss has done so many different things throughout their career. What is, you know...
What is Kiss?
What is Kiss? I mean, they, you know, they've sort of prided themselves on, you know, they had Beth, they've had heavy metal stuff, they've had, you know, it's crazy when people say that stuff. They, well, that's not Kiss. Well, what is Kiss?
You know?
I mean...
Like, I was involved in the Crazy Nights record, too, with Ron Nevison. And, you know, I heard somebody say that he was scared of the band. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. But it's not about being scared. It's about, you know, as a producer, and even Ron has told me this, it's about, you know, the people, your clients are the band. They will make the record they want to make, period.
Right.
And you can guide them, and you have to get inside their head and figure out, you know, what is it that you want? You tell me with words, I have to extrapolate that from you, and then I have to make that into music. And
right.
Make it on a CD or now an MP3, unfortunately.
Is it different? I mean, and you know, building on that, is it different when you're working with an Alice in Chains when they're sort of an unknown band as opposed to working with a Kiss when they're, you know, 24, 25 years into their career?
Same principle. You know, Alice knew what they wanted. How to get it, that's a different story.
Right.
You know, the Jar of Flies thing was, you know, 10 days. Wow. Bing, bang, boom, done, wow. You know. Written, arranged, recorded, and produced in that time. And, you know, that was the first EP to ever hit number one. Can anybody do that again? I don't know.
Right.
Can they do it again? I don't know. You know, it's all timing. You know what
right.
I mean? And, yeah.
No, I got you. How does your role change dealing with an unknown band as opposed to dealing with a Kiss?
Well, I want to say one thing going into it, because I was going to ask that question about even Brad Gillis. You know, somebody that's not famous for making a solo record, how does that approach different from your standpoint? Is there an effort for originality there? Or?
It's... I've done a couple of solo records with artists, obviously. And my approach that have been in bands or were or in those bands, it depends on their headspace at the time, right? They want to make if they want to make it like a departure of a record, you know, then they're going to take their own material that might have been rejected by the band.
Good point.
And you know, they want to put that forth as themselves, right? But at the same time, you don't want to put out, you know, crappy songs, because
right.
songs are what we buy.
Right.
They are. It doesn't
Especially
matter anything
today.
Else.
Right.
Right. Nothing else matters but the song, right? If
right,
you have a
right.
great song, you're always going to sell records. So it's just, you know, to me, it's the same experience. It's just guiding somebody toward, you know, that way. I don't know how I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Yeah, it's cool.
But you know what I mean, right?
So let me ask you this. You know, we all have album pictures in our photo albums or whatever, and we look back on those pictures and think, oh, I can't believe I had the haircut or I wore it. Do you do that with albums sometimes? You think, man, if I could go back to that record, I would change this, or I would, or man, I'd like to have another crack at that one song or whatever?
Not really. I used to do that,
okay.
But now I've more accepted it as it is what it is for that moment given.
Right.
And I tell artists that I'm working with, you know, the up-and-comers and, you know, people that I'm grooming now, that, you know, it's this is for the moment given, okay? You know, you might be 20 years old or whatever, and this is your moment right now, and we're going to do the best we can for you at this moment. 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now, you're going to be in a different headspace.
Right.
So your voice is going to change.
Yeah.
Your music will change. And so you can't write that record now.
Right.
You can only write the record now for now.
Right. So I think Paul Stanley's one of the worst for me, as much as I love him, is he always seems to pick out an album and say, well, you know, that wasn't great, or that was a great album. It wasn't a great Kiss album. He does that with The Elder. I think... You know, I mean, I think Carnival of Souls gets picked on because it was different.
Yep.
And I hate to hear that, because, no, at the time, it's what you wanted. And I'm
That's
glad
right.
that you actually sat here and you said, no, we deliver the album that the client wants.
That's
and,
right.
And
that is our goal.
And I wish they would own that, because I don't have a problem with any of their albums. I mean, if you're a Kiss fan, I mentioned the word reinvention, but you could call it following the trends or whatever you want to call it. But they did it, they're guilty of it, and they should be proud of what they put out, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And, you know, I got into a little bit of a tiff with Gene during that record, and he just, you know, he wanted to be like Billy Corgan at the time. And I was like, wait a minute, why would you want to be like that little dude when, you know, not that Billy's not a badass,
right.
but at that time, you know, Gene, you're an icon. Why would you want to be like somebody else? Be yourself. Let's be ourselves here. And he said to me, he goes, well, after we were nose to nose, and he said to me, he says, I just want to sell records like that again.
Wow.
Oh, well, you don't want to be actually like Billy Corgan. You want to sell records. Like, that's a completely different conversation. So, it people kind of misrepresent themselves sometimes. You know, when the passion is on the table. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. They love to kind of go down that route, I think, and trash the past when it just doesn't need to be done.
But we do that too. With our, like I said, with our like pictures in our yearbooks or whatever, our eyes go, sure. Oh, I can't believe.
Oh, sure. Yeah I had a ponytail or whatever, you know.
Right. But that, you're right. That was the moment. I mean, the fashion of the fashion of the 60s, you know, is not ever going to come back. But that was what it was, or in the 70s or 80s or whatever.
Right.
So,
and same with music. You know what I mean? It goes in a 20-year cycle, I think-ish. You know, so what was popular 20 years ago, 30 years ago, is almost popular again.
I would agree with you. And I mean, hopefully, I would love to see more of that. I would love to, you know, I talk about guitar-oriented rock and roll, just plain rock and roll. You know, you can take it back to Cheap Trick or Early Kiss or Joan Jett. I mean, I love the basics, right? Give
Absolutely.
Me drums, guitar, and a bass. And
a badass vocalist and
right?
go to town, right?
Absolutely. And we have so little of that in the mainstream music world now, which just seemed to be dominated for, it feels like, almost 20 years now. We've kind of lived the hip-hop world, right?
Right, and it's burning it out.
I hope so.
And we separate all this stuff into genres, but what's the difference between Alice in Chains and Rolling Stones? Nothing. It's guitars, bass, drums, and a killer vocalist.
Right, exactly. And the Stones are out there doing it, and so is Alice.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And people enjoy both as equally.
Right.
You know, they might have a preference to one to the other, but that's their personal preference. It has nothing to do with the music. It has nothing to do with the performers. It has nothing to do with anything but your personal preference when you buy that ticket. That's all.
And good songs. Like you said, good songs.
Right.
Yep. Stand the test of time. If you've got the songs, you're going to be around in 20 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a thing that they call one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's for a reason, right?
Right.
Well, we're coming up on our time limit, so I do want to include one thing. We do Classic Rock Drops podcast, which is all new music by classic rock artists. So I don't necessarily know what you're working on, but whatever that is there something you want to talk about that you're...
I'm currently involved in a few different things. I have a entertainment company. We're in the process of grooming young female artists at the moment. We have three of them.
Great.
Unfortunately, I can't mention their names, but
no problem.
You know, they're coming along.
Keep your eyes and ears open for that.
That exactly. And the name of the company is F3 Entertainment. And I'm also involved in a something that I invented. It's kind of like you can't really call it sound healing, but there's a it's just something, sound that'll help you sleep, help you revitalize, and, you know, get deep within you to, you know, bring out the best in every day.
That sounds interesting.
And that's called Tomes.
Okay.
And it's a very strange spelling. It's T-A-U-M-M-H-O-M-S.
Okay.
But you can go to TobyWrightMusic.com, and I have a little tab there. You can just click on that, and then you click on the icon the icon of Tomes, and then it'll take you right to tomes.com. At the moment, it's coming up, so, you know, you'll be just sign up, and we'll get back to you when it's ready to go.
I'll do it. I'm interested.
So it'll be within the next month for sure.
Very cool.
Very nice.
Well, Toby, thank you.
Thank you very much for sitting down with us, and that was a great discussion.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Check. There we go.
Okay, we're good.
All right.
Are you?
Yeah. This is a Kiss podcast, damn it.
Can you hear me?
These guys are the best. Are we on the mic? Is it recording?
It is.
It is now.
It is.
You're live. See, Ken.
Well, first of all, I'm a little starstruck. And it's weird because...
I know, because Michael Sweet's here. I saw him, too.
Yeah. So, it's like, I guess I... The Big Rock Show was like the first thing, right?
Right.
I mean, so I got a little history with you.
Sure.
But you progressed into something that is just unusually super cool. Okay? So...
It is cool.
It is really cool. So while I'm over here just like... staring at him when you ask him a question.
he's fangirling over here.
Wow.
That's all right. So, great show last night.
Thank you.
As always.
You two, like gloves, how did that develop?
Over about, I guess, almost 20 years now.
Yeah. Okay.
So, that's yeah. cool.
And honestly, that it was about 10 years of just hanging out and not playing.
Really?
Yeah. We just started playing together for fun.
Yeah.
We were talking last night, if we ever cast a Randy Rhoads documentary, you and that white Les Paul.
It was a white Les Paul last night, man.
And his strap matches, too.
That's right.
And my fee just went up because I've been hired for the David Spade biopic.
There you go.
Also, and I'm up for Tommy Shaw and Peter Frampton.
Joe Dirt.
And, pretty much anybody with blonde, shaggy hair.
No.
I've already been hired.
No, last night, though, you didn't look like David Spade. You looked like Randy. So.
I'm the butt double for him, so.
All right. So one of the things that I wanted to kind of get captured here was, because you guys get, I mean, you guys framed it up perfectly last night when you asked, you rotated the questions that you always get asked. So we're trying to stay away from that a little bit, but we only got 13 minutes left.
Got it.
So I kind of want to touch for just a minute on where you came from, right? I mean, we got a little bit of history here, from Hair of the Dog to a couple of different things. So, Ryan, let's kind of start with you.
Sure. So, like you said, it was Hair of the Dog, and the way that we all met, the funny thing that's kind of cool about this expo is... we all really became, the three of us became friends because of Kiss. That really is the reason.
Okay.
And Jeremy and I had a gig called the Big Rock Show, which was just something we were doing for fun. And Doc McGee called me, Kiss's manager, and said, would you guys like to be on the Kiss Cruise? And this was the first one.
Yep, I was there.
And I was like, yeah, for sure. Okay, so we had a guitar player that couldn't make it at the time. Jeremy wasn't in the band yet.
Okay.
So called, but Bo Bice told me about Philip. I called Philip. Philip wasn't available. He was on tour. He goes, but my roommate can do this.
Okay.
So that night, went to Philip's house, drank Jack Daniels. And about 2 hours later, Jeremy showed up, drank Jack Daniels. And then we agreed that he was going to do the cruise. So we did a warm-up show in Nashville and went to the cruise. And Jeremy's been a Big Rock Show ever since. And we don't really get to do it as much anymore just because we're so busy with Ace and Gene and everything and the residency and all that. But we came together because of Kiss. Really.
That's pretty cool.
It's a trip. It's a trip, you know, and we're just... We're loving it because who would have thought that, you know, we were invited to do every Kiss cruise all nine of them.
Yeah.
To be on board and play with them and everything. And then who would have thought that we'd end up playing with Gene and Ace? You know, it's cool, man. It's movie stuff.
It is.
It's movie stuff. It really
so,
is.
So book stuff or something. So there's something in your future just there.
Yeah.
So
Broadway musical stuff, I think. Tony Award winning stuff.
So let's talk about you, Valentine's Saloon. I know Valentine's Saloon, so
yeah. Well, that's just like I'm the added new guy with Valentine's Saloon because Jeremy knew those guys.
I was the Valentine's Saloon guy.
Okay, sorry.
I started sneaking into clubs to see that band, but you know, it takes two of us to replace one Henry Meyer, and
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So, John Corabi, right?
Yeah, Corabi.
Okay. Got some more history to talk about.
Man, I was here. I was doing like. Countryside man gigs for 10 years and doing other stuff too, doing Corabi. Started doing the Metal of the Mercy shows, which is kind of what spawned the residency.
Yep.
And then from there, it's kind of Kistery now, I guess. So, you know, to use that term.
So,
but going back to Ryan's thing, I met Philip because he was wearing a Kiss shirt. He was at a show.
Funny how that happens.
Of a band I used to be in, and you know, I had a girlfriend, so I wasn't talking to girls. But this dude in the front row had a Kiss Love Gun shirt, and
it was like in
2001 one.
So you couldn't get Kiss shirts at Walgreens.
Like, right. Yeah, exactly. Like you can now.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was
like, man, that guy's got a kid. I'm going to talk to that dude after the show.
Well, because it actually meant something back then. And not right. that it doesn't now, but the thing is, you can go to Hot Topic, you can go to Forever 21, you can go to Walgreens, you can go to Walmart, and there's Kiss stuff everywhere. Yeah. And back then, it was a thing. If someone wore it, it's because
they're wearing the colors.
It wasn't like the Kardashians.
It was your flag, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I walked through Target last summer, and it was like in the women's section, there's Kiss shirts hanging over there. And I'm like, yeah, people that buy that don't even know
it
what they're buying.
It says something about the band, too, because seriously, the whole thing about, you know, you look around this convention today, and Kiss is really like what all this stuff is built on. There's so much Kiss stuff around here, and the fact that, yeah, there's a guy dressed as Gene Black over Gene over there. Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
and,
Robert, yep.
And it's funny because, you know, who would have thought, being a little kid and just being so obsessed with it or anything, you'd actually make a living doing something based on a band that you love so much. It's really cool, man. And this whole event's pretty awesome.
Yep, it is.
And even when you were with Hair of the Dog, you guys covered a Kiss song.
We sure did. We'd always end the night with, we were a brand new band. And I would say the same thing every night. The last song, I'd say, look, we're a new band. A lot of you don't know our music, so we want to leave you with something I know you all know, and we played this. And it was awesome, man. It was just a good time. Yeah.
All right, so to tie it back to Gene Simmons Band and Ace Frehley Band, let's say we know you've already done the Ace Frehley solo album last Christmas in Jersey. So Gene comes to you and says, guys, we're going to go out. We're either going to do the Asshole album or we're going to do the Gene Simmons solo album. What are you saying?
78 solo record, for sure.
Hey, yeah. Can we just tell you something funny about Asshole? His wife, Shannon, calls it his self-titled album. Which we love. This is great.
So when you guys are on the road with Gene, this is a different question, maybe. You guys eat well? Does he take care of you?
He took care of us. We got treated like we were in Kiss.
He treats really us like we're in Kiss.
Awesome.
He was great.
Absolutely.
That's good stuff. He seems like naturally a good guy.
Man.
Yeah. It was
scary going to work for him because, you know, and I would say this in front of him. He has a very kind of menacing personality.
Yeah.
He can seem a bit very short and curt sometimes and everything. And I told him, like, you know, it's just like, this is either going to go really great or we're going to be like, oh, my God. He was just awesome. He treated us so well.
If you ask us each individually that same question, we'll just start gushing like schoolgirls. I miss that guy so much. Yeah. I really, really do.
He really took care of us.
Yeah.
So is there any future plans? I mean, and I know that's... But, you know, the end of the road's ending.
Right. According to him, there is. If he, like, just on the phone, it was probably, I told you, what, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And if there's going to be more shows, of course we are. Of course we're going to. He said, we all have, you know, and that's what he says. But you can't hold him to it. I'm glad that he didn't say no. But, you know, we're on call for him.
Right. Well, you guys have a good thing going, too, so.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, if Gene has a day off, guys are probably working. So
he does not. He doesn't like. He doesn't like.
There's
days
no
off.
Days off.
He doesn't like days off.
That's what I'm saying. There's an open day in the schedule. It's kind of like you guys have to keep that open.
He will fill it. Yeah, he will.
How fun is it for you guys to have these guests coming up and playing with you, even with the rock and roll residency and all this stuff? I mean, there's got to be times where you look over and you're like, holy crap!
Wow, we're playing Highway Star, and there's Roger Glover and Don Airey right there. Yeah. It's like,
man, we're doing He's a Whore and Robin Zander singing it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that sometimes it allows you to not only play with someone that you love, also you get to do something you never could do. Because sometimes you just, like, you're not going to try to do certain songs because it just would cheapen the song. Like, if you can't quite cut it and you have the real singer doing it, man, it's awesome.
We're not going to do Soldiers Under Command.
Yeah.
You know, without him.
Okay, so that was phenomenal last night.
Thank you.
Man, I'll tell you. That song, I didn't know it, and it wasn't like learning rock and roll all night.
Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of moving parts going on in that song. I was actually really proud of us when it was done. I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, that was great.
It was fun.
Yeah, you guys killed it, man.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, Michael killed it. I mean, he was just, Michael killed it. He was
to have him singing it, I mean.
And then to have Jack playing bass from Exodus, which is like one of the most evil bands from the 80s.
It was heaven and hell.
We had to even it out a little bit.
I grabbed that picture of him back there swinging his hair with Michael Sweet singing, thinking, that's not something you saw in 1985.
No, we did not.
All right.
That was fun.
It was so great.
Everybody that sat in with us last night was great.
Yeah.
So, kind of looking to the future. Well, did you guys play on Ace's covers album coming up?
I played one guitar solo.
Okay.
And I did it in my kitchen.
That's the way it happens now, right? So, but that's cool. So, well, first of all, are we done with KISS and the Exit In events?
For the foreseeable future, yes.
I figured it was kind of like just too, y'all were just too busy. So.
Yeah. Man, it's not just being busy. I guess it's just kind of weird now.
When we started, it was just really, it was four huge KISS fans that,
right,
under the radar, just doing it, and we're as not under the radar as you can be,
right,
as far as like that kind of thing anymore. I don't know, it just doesn't feel as, it's like we're just really kind of in now, which is really bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, it's so weird, but it's like, this just feels kind of strange.
So is that the negative side of the success that you're having right now, or is there... I mean, is there any negative to this? Or are you guys just loving where you're at right now?
Love it.
The thing is most guys that tour are put in situations because of the musical situation, and we were friends before this. So it's like friends getting thrown into this dream adventure together, and, you know, you don't have to explain it to the other guy when you get back.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
we get it together.
Well, and you can see it in your interaction on stage. I last night I know a couple of you. You'd look over at him, or he'd look over at you, or
right.
And you could just see, like, holy crap, this is what we do.
It's a lot of fun, man. We love it.
Awesome,
love it.
Yeah, we're thinking. We're actually thinking all bands now need three guitar players.
See, right?
Man,
it's a good thing.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. You know.
Yeah.
Well, so is there solo efforts by anybody? Are you collectively going to do something together? I mean, what's in the future of you guys?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Okay.
Honestly, we're booked with Ace right now through December. Yeah. So we just keep hoping that, you know, more dates come in. And more dates come in every couple of weeks, and they keep adding to the schedule. So right now, we're just focusing on Ace. And we know Gene's on the End of the Road tour. And if we hear from him, great. We don't bug him, but if we hear from him, great. And who knows, man? Right now, I'm just looking at December just to get through these Ace dates, and then, you know, more stuff will come together by the end of the year.
I was going to the Brushy Mountain show because that kind of worked with my schedule, and I can't get to Atlanta because I'll be in Florida. But anyway, I'm sorry that I don't get to see Ace this round.
Oh man,
it's bugging me. But one of the questions I had that. When you guys are doing either band, is there one of you that kind of fills the role as the musical director of the band?
Not really.
So,
we all kind of...
It's kind of cool now because we play together so long.
Yeah.
If a song is laid on their plate,
right,
we can kind of just listen to it and know who's going to do what.
Okay.
Without even... I mean, it's kind of gotten there.
Yeah.
It's easier with Ace because it's obviously I'm playing bass on that song. But
yeah. And Ace is obviously doing the solos.
Yeah.
So. But
Gene, there was some work, like with three guitars. But at this point, like Ryan said, we kind of know what part the other guy's going to go for.
Okay.
We just kind of know, and vocally also.
Yeah.
So some of the work is already kind of done, like subconsciously.
Yeah.
So
cool.
It's weird too because you would think, and we would like to, but there are no rehearsals. I mean, you do your homework at home.
Yeah.
And when you get together, you got to know what's going on. Like we see Ace about 4 minutes before every show.
Wow.
He walks in like 5 minutes. He walks in, intro music starts. We rehearsed with him once in Florida before the KISS cruise, right? Didn't we?
Yeah, in the 78 record.
That's
we actually rehearsed for 2 days.
That's right. Yeah.
That seems like a strange dynamic to me. But, I mean, I saw you guys, obviously. Of course, I saw you on the cruise with Ace. And I saw you here in Nashville with Ace. I did get to catch that one.
Oh, cool.
So phenomenal. So really enjoyed the set list. And I've heard from some of the other guys that have seen some of the more recent shows that the set list has changed a little bit. Some of the KISS songs have been brought back into the set list.
And honestly, stuff off the new record is what we've been adding.
Yeah.
I mean, we've only added one KISS classic.
I think the classic we had was Watching You, wasn't it?
Yeah. Watching You.
Man, we're the three of us, I can answer for the next one that we want to do, and we hope he does, is Got the Cheese.
Okay.
We want to do Got the Cheese. We're hoping that he'll, because he has done that in the past on his solo shows. And that's just a classic Ace solo, so we're hoping that we can get that back in there. Yeah.
Well, it's great having fans of the band, because as fans ourselves, we know that you guys, you know, sort of representing sort of us, even when we see you guys up on stage, like, you know, they did it. You know, that's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Well, at 4 o'clock today, you can hear all about that with us and Julian Gill for our panel, Fan to Band.
That's right. We look as long as on the hobby.
Greg Corbett. Oh, yeah. There's Greg Corbett back there.
Yeah.
So, did you guys have influence on what Gene kind of picked out to play and what Ace did as well on that run?
More with Gene.
Yes for Gene.
Okay.
No, with Ace.
You guys did great with it. I mean,
thanks.
I heard Charisma Live in Indianapolis, right?
You're welcome.
Yeah, Got Love for Sale.
Stuff like...
Got Love for Sale.
He would try anything. He would be down for anything. If Jeremy wrote the lyrics out, we'd give it a shot. He was fearless.
She's So European.
Yeah.
Wow. Sweet Pain.
Sweet
Pain was great.
Honestly, I carried around the lyrics for Love Him and Leave Him for a year and a half.
Yep.
And he
wouldn't do it.
Even the last show, I laid it out in front of him, be like,
what? I always wanted to hear Charisma Live, so
good.
Thanks for making it happen.
Awesome, man.
He must have really liked that one because we did that at almost every show.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fantastic
It was
song.
Weird, too, because I remember, like, in Australia, and his set list choices were cool, too, because I remember one night he wrote up the set list, and we opened with Shout It Out Loud in the Eye, and we were like,
yeah.
Man, it killed. It just fucking killed. It was so good, yeah.
Well, I know when I was in Indianapolis, that's the only time I got to see you guys. I mean, I think I've randomly run into you and asked you about anything in the future, and, of course, you know, the festival show that never did happen.
Yes,
Of course, I kept thinking that was going to happen. I was going to get to see you guys in Tennessee, and you know.
Sure.
Yeah, what was the Monsters of Rock thing, right?
Yeah.
So I actually have the T-shirt for the show that never happened.
No way.
Because they pre-sold those. But
I'd love to see that. That'd be cool.
So yeah, I mean, we got to get some promoters to bring the Gene Simmons Band southward.
Sure.
But anyway, I think our time's about to run out. So.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks, bro.
All right, we are with Gary Corbett at the Nashville Rockin' Pod. Thrilled to have Gary. So, Gary, kind of what we do, we have a Kiss Talk podcast, which is all Kiss, and then we also have Classic Rock Drops, which you actually talked to us at the first Rockin' Pod on. Classic Rock Drops does all new music by classic rock artists. So whatever you're doing new, we would feature typically in that podcast.
I think that's great. So, that's awesome.
But, so we kind of want to touch on... For me, Gary Corbett doesn't get enough credit in I don't know, the informational world, so to speak. So, I mean, and you got kind of a crazy history in the respect that, I mean, you're a co-writer on She Bop by Cyndi Lauper, which for most of what I think in my age people know, I'm more like, well, he played keyboards for Kiss, he's played keyboards with Cinderella, right? You just don't think of the pop side of Gary Corbett.
Right.
So, I mean, give us a broad spectrum of the highlights of Gary Corbett and maybe the most important thing that you've done.
Well, the variety thing is, you know, it's definitely real.
Yeah.
It's always been something that's inside of me. I mean, I love all kinds of music, and I genuinely learn, like, when I get a gig with somebody that's in a bit of a different genre, I immerse myself in that genre until I feel like I'm really belong there, you know? And I've always loved that process, and I love being able to do it, and I love the variety of the music never getting stale because I'm always doing something different.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's a good thing career-wise because Gene Simmons and I had a conversation that still to this day has stuck with me.
Okay.
And he questioned it because he said that I would be better off picking one and sticking to it and not confusing people because when you do too many different things, nobody knows what you really do.
Yeah, because I mean, he's all about branding, right?
Right.
And I don't know. I don't think of a brand when I think of Gary Corbett because I already know your variety, right? So, but in any case, continue.
But I didn't agree with him at the time. But now,
good.
Older in hindsight, I wonder, you know, if
no.
I might have done better.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and gotten further. I don't know if gotten further is really the right thing.
Right.
Maybe just been a little bit better off financially.
Well, that point I can understand.
Yeah.
I love what you've done, and I love the involvement and kind of how
well,
you progress.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I was just sitting there thinking that I don't know, did you tour with Cyndi Lauper?
No, okay. Never got to. Always okay. Wanted to.
Yeah.
That was one of those, that's the okay. One gig that I still want to try to do.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I went back, I saw Cyndi Lauper in Chattanooga back in the day. I'm thinking, did I see Gary Corbett and not know it? So.
No, so how did so how did that come along? I mean, how did you it come that you worked with her to write the song?
Oh, well, she was in a band called Blue Angel. That was a New York, somewhat like new wave, punky, 50s kind of girl group band. And okay. And she was a powerhouse front person with the band, and they were great. And I used to go see them all the time in New York. And they had a deal on PolyGram, maybe sold 20,000 records. Not a big success.
Yeah.
And then the band broke up. And she had the same manager as a guy that I was writing songs with, a guy named by the name of Steve Lunt, who was in a band called City Boy.
Okay.
That was an English rock band produced by Mutt Lange. They had one hit in the States, and then he moved to New York and was trying to make it as a producer.
Okay.
And we hooked up and started writing songs together. And they shared the same manager. And Cyndi had agreed to sing our demos for us. Like when we finished the songs that we were writing and wanted to record demos, she would come over and sing the demos for us. We had written 3 or 4 songs, and she came over to do vocals for us. Shebop was completed musically, but that was it. And she had just signed her solo deal and hadn't recorded the record yet. And
okay.
Heard the track by accident and said, "What is that?"
And the rest is history.
Yeah, and it was already titled Shebop because we gave every piece of music we started a title just so that it would be easy to remember and reference
yeah.
And find. And so it was the title. Steve was from England, and bop was an English slang term for masturbation.
Yeah.
And so we thought it was funny at the time, and we titled it that, and then she ran with it and actually wrote the song about it.
And all the 13 and 14-year-olds out there singing it had no clue.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome. That was one of the things about you that I found out later, you know, once I knew you were playing with Cinderella and those sorts of things. So, So Gene Simmons talks to you about that stuff, but how important is it for you to have that variety? I mean, would it get bored doing just one thing over and over and over?
For me, it does. You know, I grew up in the 60s, and when I was growing up, pop radio, which is all you listen to, you know, it
yeah.
was AM radio,
right.
And it was the Supremes, and it was the Beatles, and it was, you know, they didn't distinguish
there was
by
no genre. Yeah.
Right, it was just all pop.
And we've talked about that before, like how you could, when we were growing up, you could be a fan of Kiss, and you could like the Commodores,
right.
You could like Earth, Wind, and Fire,
absolutely.
And you could like Ted Nugent.
Yes, and that's the era I grew up in, and there were, good music is good music. I don't care what genre it is, the good stuff, I like it.
Yeah,
and,
you
know,
too.
And so that's the mindset that I always had. And, you know, I was as comfortable playing an Al Green song as I was a Beatles song. It
right.
didn't matter to me. And then, you know, in the 70s, as I became a teenager and bands like Deep Purple, and that was great too.
Right.
You know? But it didn't make me start disliking the funk stuff because I liked something else. And I always wanted to play all of it. And so My aspiration growing up was not to be a rock star. It was to be a studio musician. It was to be one of the guys that could play with all of the great names and famous people, but could go to the store and not be recognized by anybody. That was always my goal. And again, you know, maybe that wasn't the best for my retirement plan, but
you've got a lot of great stories. You've had
yes,
a lot of great memories.
Absolutely. And I've gotten to play with a lot of, you know, my heroes.
It's awesome.
So, I mean, let's kind of, I mean, you've got your, you have your live performance history.
Mm-hmm.
So, playing for Kiss behind Leon probably was not a highlight, just because that's got to be kind of weird.
Yeah, but you know what? It's all how you look at it. When I got hired to do the job, it was part of the job description. I knew it going in.
Yeah.
I wasn't a KISS fan before, but I was always aware. I knew who they were, and I knew what they did. And even to me, not being a KISS fan, I couldn't imagine a keyboard player with KISS. So I completely understood why they did the offstage thing. There were other bands during that era that chose to do it that I didn't necessarily agree with, because to me, their image didn't say no keyboards. But with KISS, I completely understood it.
Sure.
And, you know, they're huge. And so, you know, going in, the things that I looked at were different than the previous gig. I came from playing with Lou Gramm, who was my all-time favorite singer.
Yeah.
That gave me goosebumps because of his singing abilities every night. It wasn't about the show. It was about him hitting that note at the end of Jukebox Hero that sent chills up my spine.
Right.
And that's who I was playing with when I was hired to play with KISS. And so it's a completely different gig. And the way I looked at it going in was a completely different thing. And, you know, my role in that band, because, you know, I was hired because their current record at the time, Crazy Nights, had a bunch of keyboards on
it.
I was hired because of that. I was hired for the Crazy Nights tour. But I didn't want to just play three songs. I wanted to play the whole show. If I'm going to be there, I want to play. And so that's how my role with those guys kind of evolved. I played, not only did I play the keys on every song, but I was also triggering samples of sound effects or background vocals. I was very busy back there. But it was more the kind of thing where you would only notice it if I stopped.
Okay.
And, you know, all of a sudden, I was like an expensive effects unit, basically.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the challenge of filling that role was a completely different challenge than what I did with Lou. And I embraced it, you know. It was more about finding the sounds that filled and blended well with the guitars and, you know, with the set, because that was my role, was to embellish what they were doing, not to stand out from the band.
Yeah.
And, you know, so my challenge was coming up with really cool sounds that made the house vibrate. And, you know, sometimes I had to do explosions because the fire marshals weren't allowing the pyro that day.
Okay.
You know, and that was at the show. You know, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And ultimately, the Hot in the Shade tour, they actually built what we affectionately called the condo, which was my little area that was actually fine. Because they used to put me anywhere they could just stick me behind the PA or anything.
Yeah.
But still, it was always audience people that could see me, you know. So, but then they finally built a purpose-built place to hide me. And then that became the spot to be during the show, because, you know, all the opening acts would wind up there because it was a great place to watch the show from, and all the opening acts were grown up KISS fans, so to them they were,
that's true,
were
but
yeah,
on that Hot in the Shade tour you had Slaughter and
Winger and Danger. And
Faster Pussycat
and Ted would be here and Mark would be here and when I lean in to sing my background parts, they'd lean in with me and sing, and they'd be all thrilled.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that tour is important in KISS history because it started out, the Hot in the Shade tour started out one way, sort of ended the other. You know, they started focusing more heavily on their classic songs, right?
Well, I think that happened more after the Crazy Nights. At the end of Crazy Nights, the Crazy Nights U.S. tour happened. And then that summer, we did the Monsters of Rock in Europe, second co-headlining with Iron Maiden.
Right.
And it was those shows where they started to break out Strutter and Deuce and all the songs that the diehard KISS fans have been calling for.
Okay.
You know, and I noticed there was definitely a new enthusiasm at those European shows because of that.
Cool. So what wasn't there like a mishap at some point where something got triggered when it wasn't supposed to? What's it? I can't recall that story.
Yes, it was God of Thunder.
Okay.
On the Hot in the Shade tour. Like I said, I used to trigger background vocal samples.
Yeah.
I used to trigger, I would have them mapped out on my keys where, like, two words of the one, and I'd have to trigger them in time to play, you know, well, because the band was not playing to a click and the tempo was not always exactly the same. Okay. So, I also had the chorus, the lead vocals of Paul for forever in my sample library, just in case if he got sick or something, and because that was the highest that he had to sing in the night. And if he had a problem, I would be able to double him with samples.
Cool.
It was in the same disc dump as the God of Thunder, I Am the Lord of the Wasteland part in the middle, which was also I triggered.
Yeah.
And in the show, it was the Sphinx. If you remember, the stage had the big Sphinx, the mouth opened.
Yep.
And it was the output of my sampler that was feeding the laser thing in the mouth that made it look like it was talking. You know, so we get to that part of the song, and the lights go down, the smoke machine starts sending out smoke, and the Leon's mouth opens, and I hit forever.
I love it.
Gene looked
over at me and immediately started doing the rest of it with his mic and bailed me out. But yeah, that was the one mishap that happened with samples.
I love it, though.
Yeah,
I love that you can talk about it today. It's not a problem, because I mean, I don't think I've ever actually heard that story from anybody but you. So it's not like it's one of those that's out there.
I tried really hard not to ever have, you know, because those kind of mishaps are really embarrassing.
Sure.
And nobody wants to be accused of using tracks and stuff like that. Right. But I will say that the samples that I used were not vocals that were pulled from their studio recordings. They were actually, we went into a studio and stood around a mic and sang all of our live background parts.
That's cool.
And that's what I sampled. So.
And I've always said, when people start saying this thing about the samples and all that stuff, the background vocals live and stuff, to people that have a problem with this, I always say this probably goes on way more.
Yes.
That you would not even think. And so, I mean, it's not that big a deal.
No. And, you know, there are ways of using it where it actually, if the band is still playing and it's just there for parts that wouldn't be played otherwise,
right,
then it's, you know what, it's more of an effort for the band to do it than not do it. So they're just trying to make it sound better. You know, it's not cheating. If the show stops when it goes down, then maybe we got another conversation.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think there's any, when it's there just to make it sound better and it's not being run by machines. Yeah.
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 Well, it all goes back to, you know, that's one of the things I don't care much for pop music today, is that there's no human element in it.
Yes.
You know, it's not that it's an electronic kind of music, because keyboards are an electronic instrument. I can accept that, because it takes somebody pushing the chords and to make it sound, you know, like you.
But the pop music that I think that bothers you is the stuff that's coming out now, where the people who are making it are not actually playing the parts. They're just pulling it from whatever libraries they buy.
Right.
And the problem that happens with music like that is that everybody goes out and buys these great libraries and uses the same 10 presets because they sound great.
Right.
And you can make them work in any pop song, but then everybody's songs sound the same. And so that's what, you know, when you buy those things and you're going to use them, you really need to kind of tweak on them a little bit, make them your own, at least change them so that it's not that recognizable.
Yeah.
Man, this has been great having him on.
Yep. So I want to go back to one thing, and that's, so you mentioned Lou Gramm, and because the question that I led up to was, what is the peak for you? Was it playing with Lou Gramm? I mean, was that your moment?
Yeah, I can tell you a story. When I was first engaged to my wife and I was still playing in a wedding band in New York, during the summers I used to play up in the Catskill Resort region up upstate New York. And I was driving up for the summer, and my wife, now my wife, then my girlfriend, was driving with me. We were driving up there and smoking a joint and listening to Foreigner 4 and having the deep conversations of life and she asked me, she goes, if you could, you know, play with anybody in the world, who would it be? And Farmer Four's on the stereo, and I went, that guy right there, because, you know, it'll never happen because, you know, he's in Foreigner and I'm in a wedding band in the Catskills, but that's who it would be.
That's awesome.
And it was probably 2 years that when I got that call, and that, you know, it still gives me chills.
It's awesome.
He was phenomenal. And I got to do it again in 2003 after his health issue.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking for me to see him like that. But he's doing really well now. I see him out there a lot. He's even done some shows with Foreigner, I've seen.
Yeah, I think I saw it the first of the year where he did maybe his last solo show, and he says, you know, I'm retiring and I'm done. But, yeah, he's kind of popped up on some various Foreigner shows, and I think that's great.
Yeah, man, he's unbelievable.
He is a legend.
Yeah.
So, well, we got to keep you on schedule, so we got to
quit. You're my last. I'm done.
Oh, are you?
Well,
yeah. Okay.
Well, let's talk about when Eric Carr was bothering you when you were playing basketball backstage at that show.
El Paso?
Was that where it was?
I think that was, yeah. That was during the production rehearsals for Hot in the Shade. They had hired a film documentary crew to document everything, and so every time you turned around there was that camera in your face. that's where that was. I surprisingly, I haven't been offered any NBA contracts since then.
What was Eric like? I mean, he seemed like the most genuine,
yes,
just wore his heart on his sleeve kind of guy.
That's you couldn't say it any better. And the one thing that I was talking to my wife about this morning about Eric was that he so loved being the drummer in Kiss. And, you know, because we were talking about how he treated the fans and how he would always spend time. And the truth is, he loved doing it because he loved being the drummer in the band. And so, you know, because we were talking about why he was such a fan favorite.
Right.
And that was, it was genuine because it really was who he was, and he just loved to be in that environment.
Well, and it's awesome. He's been gone now 27, 28
years. It's crazy.
And you and your wife are still talking about him today. That tells you the impact that he had.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were best friends. I mean, you know, when he passed away, he was, I think, the only one in the band that was still in New York, and I was still living in New York. And so even in the off season, we spent a lot of time together, you know, and it was awful, man. It was awful to watch, and yeah, still miss him. You know, our birthdays are only 2 days apart, and so we used to celebrate our birthdays together. And so mine just passed. It's, you know, July 15th. It was the 13th.
So when he was playing in cover bands around that same area, you were playing. Are you aware of him?
No, I became aware of him when he got the job. I was in a band in 1980 called Tom Dickey and the Desires. And we were signed on Mercury Records. And we were just getting ready to do our first record, and we were in need of a drummer. Kiss was going through the audition process, and so our manager was going to their manager to get all the people that
didn't get the job.
And that's how we had our audition list. It was from theirs. And so I remember when he got the job, and it was a big deal that they took a guy from Brooklyn and, you know, who he was. And so that's really how I became aware of him. But I always knew that, you know, he was a Brooklyn boy as well.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah. And we hit it off the minute we met. From the minute we met and started talking, it was like...
Well, you guys came from the same place.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so, and you add that to the fact that he was such a nice guy. And I had just arrived in L.A. from Europe with Lou and met them at a TV taping of Top of the Pops. And so we're standing in the dressing room. We had rehearsal the next day, my first rehearsal with them. And he offered to pick me up because he had a rental car and I didn't. And so, you know, and that, I mean, so from day one, we had that bond because we had to drive in the car every day. And, you know, after a month of rehearsals, we were good friends already. You know?
Right.
And so... It just never stopped.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Is there any kind of go-to Eric Carr story that you like to tell?
Well, you know, I'm actually in the middle of writing a book, and so...
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's one of those things where I think it's something I should do, and then I go, nobody wants to read this crap.
No, you should, yeah. Yeah, you definitely should.
Really? See, I have a hard time believing that, so I put it down, and I'm doing it all myself, so it's easy to put it down because I don't have to answer anybody about it.
Well, give me your email address. I'll send you daily affirmations. Yes, Gary, you should write the book.
No, all right. I don't need a lot of push, but because my wife keeps saying, every time I read what you write, she goes, I keep wanting there to be more.
Yeah.
And so I take that as a compliment, but she is my wife. But I just finished writing, because on his birthday, I said, I got to write something about him. Because I don't want it to be, it's not a Kiss book. It's really my book, my story. And Kiss is going to be a part of it.
Sure.
And so I do want to convey some of the stuff about him. And so the thing I was talking about, there was a fan that showed up in Paris. We were going out to eat lunch one day, and we'd come out of the elevator, and like many meals that I missed because of fans trying to go out to eat with him, you get out of the elevator, they'd stop him, he'd start the conversation, and then you sit down, and 2 hours later you go, I'm not hungry anymore, you know. But we get out of the elevator, and this young group of French guys, about 15, 16 years old, obviously been waiting. And so we get out of the elevator, and they pull us over, and they start talking. One of the guys had actually created a replica of Eric's drum kit. And at the time, he was using that huge 3-kick drums. Each kick drum was double length. Yes. The chrome drums with the Japanese symbols on every one of the 20 million toms.
Right.
The Simmons pads. And this kid had fabricated and created, and he took the time and set it all up on the table in the lobby of the hotel, and then pulled out like every one of the guitars that the three guys were using, besides like in scale replicas like that thing. And the detail was just unbelievable. And we sat there, and because of it, Eric was so touched. And then, you know, because of that, he sat and talked to this kid for hours. And then at the end, the kid ended up giving him the kit, saying, you can have this. He had just bought his new apartment, which he was thrilled about. And his plan was to have a glass case made and have it be the center of his living room. And we had to spend the time wrapping it and packing it and shipping it, and never saw it again once it was shipped.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
It broke his heart. But
who knows where that showed up?
Yeah. So somewhere out there, and the thing is, the guy that made it contacted me because I used to carry a video camera, 8mm video camera around with me everywhere me and Eric went. And so I have the whole thing documented on videotape.
Yeah.
And so the kid that made it is now in his 30s or 40s probably. Yeah, probably 40s. And so he contacted me and said, I remember somebody at the thing had a camera. Was it you? Because I would love to have. And it's the one tape that I can't find yet. But, yeah, man.
Well, that's a cool story, though.
But that's Eric in the nutshell, man. Yeah. You know, he loved the fans and just loved being the drummer in Kiss.
It's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yep. Very cool stuff, man.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, so other than the book, I mean, obviously Classic Rock Drops part of our podcast is about what you're doing now. And because if you're doing new music, we want to get it out there. So are you doing anything in that respect?
Yes, I've been producing some stuff.
Okay.
I'm producing a young country artist.
Cool.
More like southern rock than country.
Yeah.
I play keys on it, but I...
Can you say who it is? Or is
His name is Shane Dawson.
Okay.
His name is Shane Dawson Band. Okay. Is the name of the project. And I've been playing a lot with Scrap Metal, which is the Nelson Twins stuff.
So I haven't seen Scrap Metal in this area in years.
Yeah.
So you're still doing Scrap Metal stuff?
Yeah, we just were in Alaska, of all places, at the end of May, beginning of June.
Okay.
With the Twins and Mark Slaughter. And then we had Jack Russell from Great White and Lita Ford.
And I would love to see Scrap Metal, because the last time I saw it was at Wild Horse here in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
And they were kind of the original, the rock and roll residency, what they sort of picked up. You guys were doing...
Well, that started just for the Tin Pan South. And, you know, and we did the Tin Pan South show the first year. And then we did it the second year. And somebody said, well, you know, you should do more than just once a year. And we, it's such a logistical nightmare to get everybody to have the same night off.
Right.
But yeah. But when it happens, it's awesome. It's so much fun.
It's phenomenal for the fans. I'm going to tell you, I still have my scrap metal ball cap.
Oh, right on. Right
but
on.
No, I would love to see scrap metal anywhere near here.
Well, are we friends on Facebook or anything? Or, I mean, you know.
If we're not, we will be.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm on there.
Yeah.
I'm not on there a lot, but right. I'll, sure. You know.
Awesome.
But yeah, I would love to catch a scrap metal show. That was a phenomenal event.
Alaska was a blast. That was very cool.
So that's one of another thing I think people, because a lot of us have those desires when we were teenagers, you know, to be a rock star, tour the world. You got to do it. I mean, do you look back now and you think, you know, I mean, what do you think? You know, that you had these opportunities that we all sort of wanted.
Well, I mean, I was always grateful. I was always thrilled to be wherever I was. You know, I don't think I ever took it for granted. I loved my job. You know, I worked hard. I certainly put in the hours, and it's not always easy. You know, but when
you miss
love
birthday
what you
parties,
do,
you miss Christmases and Thanksgivings, and things with your family. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were times when I would be on a tour. Like when I was out with Lou, when I started with Kiss, I was on tour with Lou Gramm in Europe and flew from Munich, Germany straight to L.A. and started with Kiss without ever stopping at home.
Yeah.
And started with another tour.
I mean, did you even have home at that point?
Yeah, I was married.
I mean, okay. Yeah. So you did, because I imagine a lot of guys just stay on the road. They just don't ever have like a house where that's where they go back. I mean, maybe they've got a room still with their mom or whatever, where they keep their stuff, or in the garage at the parents' house or whatever. But I imagine a lot of people just, like you said, they're on this tour, and then once that tour's over, they pick up on this tour. And
I spent the better part of probably 8 years mostly away.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved it.
Yeah.
It would be hard at the beginning of a tour, you know, you miss home and everything. But once you get into the groove and, you know, that traveling circus, and it's a traveling family, and, you know, you find your friends that you call when it's time to go eat and go shopping and stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
All right.
Yep, so looking at the Scrap Metal website, I had to check this out because you just reminded me of some what a great show that was. Of course, I got to see the late Jimmy Jameson was at that show.
Yes,
so
that's
I mean,
right. And was that Jolynn Turner as
Jolynn
well?
Jolynn Turner was there too, yeah. I mean, that was an amazing one. So just for our listeners, you need to go sign up on the Scrap Metal Rocks page. You can actually go down at the bottom and subscribe to their page. And if they play anywhere near you, you need to make the effort to go see this, because I can't even – well, the web page will help you understand what goes into that show, but I'm going to tell you what, phenomenal. So, yeah.
Thank you, man. That's a lot of fun to do.
I need to go scream at a promoter somewhere to get this thing going here locally. So, but
I agree.
Gary, it was great having you on the show, brother.
Well,
anytime,
it was great to be
here, you've got anything you want to come on and talk about, our we're always available.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate what you guys are doing, you know, playing new music from people.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
So, thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Take care.
Kiss Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.